Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Adventure Options Podcast. This week, I had a nice little chat with Emily from Green Heart Tourism. We talk about everything from Brexit to Africa and back. Emily shares her experiences with market access and responsible tourism. As always, this podcast is sponsored by Adventure Writers, copywriting for the travel industry. If you need help rewording your website or writing up new pages, go to adventurewriters.agency for help. That's adventurewriters.agency. Now for the show. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm excited to talk to you. I don't think I've talked to a responsible tourism fair trade consultant yet. Would you say that's your title?
Yeah, responsible tourism consultant, definitely. Not necessarily completely a fair trade specialist. I've just been lucky enough to be able to have done some of my work linked to fair trade tourism. But responsible tourism, that's my thing.
Well, and you have done a bit of work in the tourism industry. Why don't we rewind to your background and kind of talk about how you got into the industry?
Sure. It all started, around 2008, 2009. I'd spent 12 years teaching around the world in international schools. I was a foreign language teacher in British international schools, and I'd sort of hopped my way around the world, traveled a lot, saw a lot, and then got a bit bored. So the children were learning and I wasn't anymore. And I thought, I don't think I'm going to last till I'm 65 or whatever in teaching just, you know, German and French and all that kind of stuff. So I started looking at degrees, which had some sort of a link to international development. And I searched quite broadly and then eventually came across the Masters in Responsible Tourism Management in the UK. And it was a really good one because you were allowed to do it even if you weren't from tourism as a background. You were allowed to do it part-time and long distance. So I didn't have to completely leave teaching immediately. I could sort of ease my way into it. So the first year I taught full-time and did three modules. And then the second year I was on the supply teacher and doing another three modules. And then gradually sort of in the third year, I started doing tourism-related work and did my dissertation. So by then I was...
You were tired.
Yeah.
Did you ever sleep? That's a lot to do a full-time job and be going to school at the same time.
Yeah, but by the third year, I wasn't doing that full-time anymore. So then it was just the third year was just the dissertation. And by that stage, I'd started doing work experience as an intern with TUI in the Netherlands, which is sort of our largest mainstream tour operator. They sell sunsea and sand type holidays. Everybody knows TUI. But they have a sustainability department. And I thought, I need to know how tour operators manage all of this. Because I never travel with a tour operator. We've always traveled independently with the family and camping and that kind of stuff. So I thought, I need to have a look inside the bowels of this mass tourism beast, which was very interesting and very educational. They do a lot more than you would think. Also decided I needed to have some experience with guests directly and in destinations. So I started tour leading for Intrepid. And I was tour leading and writing my dissertation at the same time. So I was like leading tours with sort of small group adventure travel in the Eastern European countries, like the Baltics and the Balkan countries, traveling with a group of 12 max, sort of backpacking. So, around and writing that dissertation during my sort of weeks off. It was right. Ridiculous.
Did you have a relationship with Jeff Manchester? Did you know him then?
I didn't know him at all. And to be honest, when you get recruited as a tour leader, it's all done through sort of the Morocco office and you know of him, you know, he's the big boss. But you don't actually physically get sort of introduced to him or anything like that.
He was my first podcast interview.
And oh, great.
And he's a lovely human being. I imagine that he's great to work with. So I just wanted to see if you had any experience in that. Did you grow up?
Well, it was an interesting company. That's why I picked them exactly, because they do all this stuff. So it was another way of learning how do the companies that call themselves responsible actually, you know, carry out the trips that they sell.
Right. Did you grow up in the UK? Were you born and raised there?
No. I've lived in the UK as a child, but I'm actually Dutch. So I lived there for a couple of years when I was sort of in my primary years, sort of 6 till 9, and then I moved to Germany for 2 and then came back to Holland. So I'm completely Dutch, but for whatever reason, I keep sort of, since childhood, I've started drifting back to the UK, except now, because now we have Brexit, so I'm staying put in Holland.
Stay where you are.
But I do love it, and I'm very sad about Brexit, so that's cut off some work opportunities for me, unfortunately.
Right. Oh, sad. I don't know if I'd even thought of that as one of the consequences of it. Yeah.
It is. It is, because, I'm an EU citizen, but, if they completely go down the route that they want to, I'm probably going to have to get some sort of special permission to be able to work in the UK as a Dutch person and vice versa.
Right.
So it's a bit, the problem is the gamble. So there's a lot of people like me who've married British people, French people, German people, Dutch people. They've raised their families and they're also not clear on their status. It's a big mess.
Yeah, that would be unnerving to not know, especially if you've already established a life, to then not know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's mad.
So were you always interested in kind of the responsible tourism, ecotourism, sustainable tourism side of things, or did that just come because of the jobs?
Yeah, I would say that because I've lived overseas so much and traveled a lot while I was there, because as a teacher, you get a lot of time off. You have like 12, sometimes 16 weeks off on average a year, and you're earning good money in international school. So I lived in Indonesia, I lived in New Zealand, Iran, places like that. So in your holiday times, you've got money to travel, you've got time to travel, and you've got buddies to travel with. So I did a lot of really cool stuff, but also lived in places, you know, where like Indonesia, where I lived, and Bali, and places like that, you see tourism happening and you think, wow, gosh, you know, this is going, I'm not sure this is all developing the way it should. And in Iran, you're thinking, gosh, nobody comes here. And it's amazing. Like I did some of my really cool skiing experiences were in Iran. So I had all this sort of, like, I had this little suitcase of living overseas experiences and traveling while I lived overseas. I thought, I need to somehow merge that with development issues, which has always been an interest of mine. And then because I found the degree, it was like the perfect choice because it all came together. And then I've been lucky enough to gradually sort of build my work experiences around that. I am a firm believer that tourism is a great tool to help, particularly in developing countries, to help them, create jobs and create businesses and hopefully, you know, make them better places to live. But, it's at the same time, it's one of those things that, you never stop learning about tourism because it's an evolving and very broad sector. And there's so many touch points with other industries, and we all do it. We're all tourists at certain times of the year, or we're hosts. You know, I have friends, some of my best friends from university are all still living in Amsterdam. And when we get together now, we have a big moan about how tourism is impacting on Amsterdam because they're raising their children in the inner city and it's getting busier and busier. All that kind of stuff, you know, and they've been living there 20, 30 years.
I was going to say, if you can believe it, because it's always been busy. Amsterdam's always been a thriving city.
Yeah, but it's getting worse. And so it's touching everybody's lives, yet at the same time, we're constantly getting on planes. And even, you know, even my friends, they're all hopping all over the place with their kids on long haul trips. You know, it's so accessible and normal now to just do these, you know, amazing holidays. Whereas I spent most of my childhood camping in France. That was as exciting as it got, but we loved it. There was nothing wrong with it.
Hey, that sounds pretty exciting for me. Yeah, go camping in France.
Yeah, but you know, you spend your whole childhood discovering France. You do a different sort of part of the country each year, so you can imagine that at some point, where you know you're in the back of the car going, "Where are we going?" Yeah, France. Oh, France.
Oh, not again, Mom. Now,
can we not go to Spain once?
You have a quote on your website that kind of was talking about what you were saying. It says, something to the effect of you're thriving for better places to live and better places to visit in that order. And I thought that was poignant to point out that first you want to make it a better place for the people to live and then a better place to visit.
Well, at the end of the day, nice places to live are the places we want to visit. It's very logical, because the horrible places to live, nobody wants to go there. Well, with a few exceptions, you know, like, you know, you might say, okay, there's a certain type of traveler that really fancies going to North Korea. You know, you can argue that's probably not the nicest place to live, but it's there and it's fascinating. So you go there knowing that probably for locals, it's not such a nice place, but you still want to go check it out. But on the whole, we like to go to pretty nice, happy places with lovely locals who are happy to see us. And that's, I think, where tourism is something, it's an interesting thing, because it does, it's, it sometimes feels like it just happens to destinations, but we're all part of this problem, if you want to call it a problem. We're all complicit. You know, you've got a few people who maybe you can argue are making some conscious decisions, but it's something that we learned when we did the masters, that's sort of the essence of everything. And I think what happens a lot in developing countries is that a lot of ministries of tourism or people writing strategies are very focused on increasing the numbers of arrivals. And then they forget that really what they should be doing is not, you know, being greedy about how many tourists you want to receive in the hope that that will give you more money, but just look at what is going wrong in our country now, what can we fix, and how can we use tourism to help us fix those things? Yeah, so it could be more jobs for young people, or it could be economic opportunities for small suppliers, or it could just be cleaning up our neighborhood. It could be really simple little things. But the tourism is just the tool.
So walk me from working with Intrepid to starting Green Heart Tourism. Like, what's the bridge there?
The bridge there is, to be honest, it's really hard when you graduate to roll into a job that's got a responsible tourism sort of job description. So you have to get creative. And a lot of people like me have just rolled into becoming self-employed. Obviously, you sort of end up developing certain sort of specialisms, or, you know, depending on where your interests lie. And in my case, I had a few sort of, let's say, steps that led to the fair trade tourism experience, which was that I did some training to become an auditor. So that's where you work with a sustainability program and then you train to become an auditor to go and check companies. So in my case, I did it both for a hotel auditing program and a tour operator auditing program. And that sort of led to me getting in touch with Fair Trade Tourism, which is Africa's sort of leading sustainability program. And I really liked the look of it. I didn't really have Africa on my radar as a place that I wanted to work in or for, but I like the organization and I like the idea that out of all the sustainability labels in tourism that are out there, there's one that has a really normal sounding name and we can link it to our coffee and our tea and our wine that we see in the supermarket. So everybody understands what it means. And they ended up hiring me for some consultancy work. So, and because they had that work for me, I had to create a business. Because, yeah, so then I was like, oh, okay, I need to register with the Chamber of Commerce and do something. So that's how I came up with Green Heart Tourism, because I needed to be able to rent myself out, basically. And then I thought of my name. I thought, okay, I'm from the Green Heart in the Netherlands, which is sort of the area between Rotterdam, Utrecht, The Hague, and Amsterdam. And it's called Het Groene Hart, literally the Green Heart of the Netherlands. And I thought, well, that's a good name, you know, Green Heart, responsible tourism. I'm from the Green Heart. So that's how I picked the name. And it's handy because everybody sort of can easily remember it. And there's not, well, at least in Holland, there's not another company that's called that for now. But lots of people use the word Green Heart. So now I do a lot of the sort of auditing type work, certification work, but also what we call market access. So that sort of seems to be the other, I don't know, journey that I've ended up on. But that was also through fair trade tourism in South Africa that I ended up in this market access.
And you do focus a lot of your energy in South Africa and the relationship between Europe and South Africa, correct?
Well, what I've got is because I ended up working, at first it was just on a consultancy basis, and then in the end they asked me to come and work in South Africa, and I got lucky that they did manage to get me a work permit for 2 years. So I was actually able to work full time for them and just ignore all the other sort of freelance stuff for a bit. And then you spend 2 years in a destination which has this sustainability program, and you meet all the lodge owners and the activity providers and the visitor attractions, and you do a lot of site visits, and then there's all these trade shows where you know big travel trade events that you're helping them with, because they're all trying to either improve their business to business contacts or selling themselves to consumers. So that was part of the job of the organization, is to showcase all these certified businesses and say, you know, in South Africa, if you're selling a holiday as a tour operator from Europe, can you please try and think about all these lovely hotels that are certified and put them into your itineraries? And that was my job, to sort of explain to people, this is who they are, this is what makes them so special. And then, you know, try and help the tour operators figure out how they could put them into trips. And once you build up that relationship with those business owners in South Africa, it's like a, you know, they're like eternal friendships, because you go and visit them, you go behind the scenes, you stay at their lodges. Sometimes you visit them several times in different periods of the year. You see them at all these trade shows. You have workshops where they all get together. It's a very nice, if you follow Fair Trade Tourism now on social media, you'll see the hashtag FTT Family. And that's literally how they are. All the certified companies in South Africa are amazing, and they're amazing to each other. So they're like what I call partners in tourism. They're all certified. They all operate along certain principles, and they help each other. So they'll do things like staff swaps. So if there's a lodge in the bush somewhere that's got an employee that would really like to experience working in a boutique hotel in the city, they'll connect with one of the other fair trade certified hotels that does this and say, listen, so-and-so here has been working for I don't know how many years. She really wants to have a month in Johannesburg or whatever to learn how to work in a smaller city hotel. Sure, that's fine. And then they swap their staff, and then they, they share all sorts of expertise. Like they share all their knowledge on energy saving and water and all sorts of stuff, community impacts. They're literally, you know, the fair trade thing is in their sort of DNA. So they're super caring and sharing, and they cross-market each other. They say, if you come and stay at my lodge, then after me, you have to go to so-and-so because he's got a beautiful lodge there. It's so inspiring, and it's very infectious. So once you've been a part of that, I had to leave because the work permit couldn't be renewed, but it's not like my relationship with all these people and businesses could stop. It's just impossible.
That is an awesome community to be a part of.
Like, it is.
I love the the work together versus like the mentality that we are working against each other or we're competitors. And so we can't, you know, we have to keep our secrets from everybody else so that we can get the competitive edge. I love that, that working together mentality.
The thing is, it's not smart to do it another way anyway, because most destinations, their first challenge is just convincing people to come, regardless of where they stay and what they do. So you're all linked together anyway, whether you like it or not. So if you can come out and you know, present your destination with this amazing sort of philosophy of, you know, we're all great employers, we're all supporting local suppliers, we're putting a lot of time and effort back into the communities in the operating environments that we work in. That's such a convincing story for whether you're a tour operator looking to work with new product owners or whether you're a consumer deciding on a destination. It's like I said, it's very infectious. You want to be a part of that. And South Africa has problems enough anyway, politically and economically, and bad PR. You know, there's always nasty stories going around. But this is a constant good story. And it, as the group grows, the story gets better and better, because it's such a diverse pool of businesses. It's everything from backpackers and hostels, sort of flashpackers, they call themselves, to township tours, to whale watching, shark cage diving, to volunteering programs, to super duper five star safari lodges. You know, it's and they all operate along the same principles, and some are much more successful than others. You know, if you look at their sort of turnover and stuff, or the amount of employees that they have, but they're all showing that tourism can be a force for good, and they're stepping where the government is failing in South Africa.
That is one of the tours or operators or destinations or things, I don't know what to call it, that I did see on your website, was the shark experience. Yep. Where you can go help collect data, and you're part of a research. There's a research team of marine biologists who are out there collecting data, and you can go out there and help them with their research. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, no, it's a good one.
That's a part of, what do you call it? Ubuntu? Is that what it is?
Yeah, Ubuntu Experiences. There was a smaller group of some of the Fair Trade certified businesses. They'd all taken part in a market access program previously run by the Swiss government. So basically for 3 years they were part of that, and they were basically getting extra support to open doors to German-speaking source markets. So it's for them to learn how to develop business partnerships with German tour operators, basically. And they finished that program, and I traveled with them for 3 years, so I knew the businesses very well, and I think I sat through at least 30 of their sort of presentations during speed marketing sessions and all that kind of stuff. And we did a lot of workshops prepping them for all these roadshows that we were taking them off. It's like a school trip. We were taking them on tour, taking them to Germany, to Switzerland, to Austria. And that had finished. And I think you know how you come back from a school trip or a really cool holiday with your group, and you don't want to leave each other. You couldn't let go. That's a little bit how we were. And so I was, after I returned from South Africa, I decided to go back to freelancing. So I approached them all and I said, guys, you've done the German-speaking markets. Is that enough, or should we carry on with some of the other markets like the Dutch or Scandinavian and English and stuff? And they said, yeah, we're not ready yet. We know we need more help. So what we did then is that I said, okay, you all embody this spirit of Ubuntu, where you're all linked together. I am because we are, kind of, that's the philosophy. So we're going to call ourselves Ubuntu Experiences, and then we're going to market ourselves, and I'm the rep. So I did a lot of sort of further attempts at opening doors for them. at the moment we're having a little bit of a break. That, you know, they're quite busy, all of them. Some of them are like literally like, oh, if I do any more marketing, I, you know, I'm going to have to say no to people. Some of them only have so many beds to put guests in anyway. But it's, who knows, we might revive it once, you know, if there's a new market that we want to work on. But it was a nice initiative because they, the big thing with market access is affordability. So a lot of smaller businesses in developing countries, they like this. They haven't got, let's say, enough cash flow to individually market themselves overseas. You know, having a representation person in a market is in a source market is very pricey. But if you pool your resources, which is also very fair trade, and you work at home, I said we're a cooperative. We're not normally in tourism. You call a collection. You call it a collection or a portfolio of, you know, hotels or whatever. And I said, no, we're a cooperative because it's sort of a fair trade term. And it was just a smart thing to do for them, you know, because they didn't have the subsidy from the Swiss government anymore, but they did have, if they pooled their resources, enough to let me be their rep. So that's what we did, basically. Yeah. And I still talk about them, even though we're not officially active anymore.
That's awesome. And if any of you listeners out there are saying, well, I want to know about this Ubuntu and all the companies that are involved, you can go to Emily's website, which is greenhearttourism. Is it .com or .org?
No, .com.
.com. Greenhearttourism.com. And I will put that in the show notes as well. So if you're listening to this in the car, don't get in a wreck trying to write this down. You can look up the show notes later and you'll see the website on there. Emily, what are you looking for now? Are you still working business to business with people? What are you doing now?
I've got a couple of things on the go at the moment. One of them is a new market access program from the German government, which has just started up. And we're going to be working on three destinations to start with, Tunisia, Ecuador, and Nepal. And I'm working on Tunisia for them at the moment. So we've just done a first trip to Tunisia to get to know all sort of the relevant people in tourism that we need to talk to, like the hotel associations and the Ministry of Tourism, that kind of stuff. And we're now in the process of identifying small tourism businesses that we would like to support for the next couple of years. And then we're going to try and connect them mostly with German tour operators, but potentially also some other European source markets. It depends a little bit on, you know, the types of travelers that they want to focus on, and maybe the source markets that they're already active in. So that's an interesting project because it's, again, it'll be a cycle of so many years of working with companies that you'll eventually get to know really well. And it involves, occasionally having to go and visit them or receive them here in Europe when they come to a big, maybe they'll come to ITB, which is a big trade event in Berlin, those kind of things. It's very exciting.
You are going to have more friends than anyone else on the planet. If you keep expanding to different destinations, you're going to have more friends than you know what to do with.
Yeah, no, it's nice. So, and you know, you have... It's also good to occasionally have to work on a new country because South Africa I can sort of do now. You know, I know all the challenges and the opportunities there. But Tunisia was a blank canvas for me. I think I've historically done one holiday very briefly. If I dig deeply enough, I think it was 5 days, just a sort of tacky beach holiday when I was a student. And now I've come back with my professional sort of hat on. And it's completely different. And what, you know, Tunisia is an interesting example. We want to try and make it a country where, you know, people are going to tour around again, because at the moment, all they're doing is flying in and flopping on the beach. But that's a waste because it's an amazing country that deserves traveling around a bit more. It's just fallen off the radar a little bit, unfortunately, with the tourism sector. And Nepal and Ecuador, same thing. You know, they're countries that face all sorts of challenges. You know, Nepal's had earthquakes. So my colleague who's working on that, you know, a lot of tourism businesses are saying, you know, we're still not back at the numbers that we'd like to be. We also need to develop maybe something other than just the trekking holidays. We need to diversify a little bit. And these are so it's processes within destinations that you can work on for a little while, and then eventually you're going to have, it's like having a child, you'll have to let them go, you know, and you move on and they move on. You can't stay with them forever.
And then you just keep having babies.
Yes, there's babies.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see what happens with Tunisia and what you guys do there. I think that'll be really fun to watch how that
grows. Yeah, and so there'll eventually be some more countries that we'll be working on as well. But these are interesting programs that a lot of both the Dutch and the German government and the Swiss government have got, these sort of what we call tourism market access programs. And you know, the bottom line is using tourism to increase the amount of companies that are successful, connect them with the right partners in Europe that can help bring them guests. And there's a lot of coaching involved. So the teacher bit of my previous life is still coming back in a lot of the work I do now. I still do lots of workshops and sit with someone and say, right, how are you going to tackle this? What do you need? Let's make a little action plan. You know, have you tried doing it this way? And so that you know, all the skills that I have from my old life are still coming. I use all the time. So
that's awesome.
My professor at the time, he did say, "Yeah, just because you were a teacher in your previous life doesn't mean you're going to stop teaching."
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has been a pleasure to speak with you. I always end these interviews with two questions. And the first one is the one that everybody hates, but I ask it anyways. And that's, where's your favorite place to go to visit? And then the second question is, leave us with a piece of advice. What piece of advice would you give today's travelers?
Okay. My favorite place to visit. Oh, that's so mean to ask that, because there's so many places, even though I accept I will not be able to see everything, and no, and none of us should be too greedy there. I suspect it is South Africa then. It's the bush and the sounds of the bush. It's perfect. You can't compare to anything, especially if you're from a busy part of the world like I am. It's the complete antithesis of all of that. This idea that you're nothing compared to nature. You know, the animals do their thing. Mother Nature has its cycles, and it's just awesome to be a part of that every now and again. Brings you back down to earth, literally. And then from sort of advice for travelers, ooh, tricky one. I'd say be creative and stop obsessing about your bucket list. Get lost on purpose. So go to those places, go to the lesser visited places. You know, don't do this sort of ticking off a list of capital cities and sort of tourism attractions that are on everybody, sort of on the top of the TripAdvisor sort of ratings and stuff. Just literally be creative and say, right, there's smaller cities and smaller towns that probably warrant a visit, and give me just exactly the experience that I want. If you want to see an old city, it doesn't have to be Paris. It could be another old French city. It's the same with the seasons. You know, don't visit places when everybody else is there. You know, be smart with your timing, because it's going to get more crowded as the population grows and more of us can get on planes and go everywhere. So be smart about it.
Beautiful. I love that. Thank you for coming on, Emily. Good luck with all your new endeavors and your old endeavors. And I just wish you luck.
Thank you so much.
Shayna here. I am so glad I was able to do this interview. Emily is just a lovely person, and I look forward to following her work. Until next time, yokoso.